Big thanks to RX Bar for supporting the morning stream. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/TMS and use the promo code TMS. That's rxbar.com/TMS. Coming up on TMS, Pornhub has some quality stats on Hawaii emergency response.
Let me get my lotion. Nintendo doing what? Nintendo don't?
That's what
I read that totally wrong. It's funny. I read the first three words like it was a question. Nintendo doing what? Nintendo. Don't. But then I realized, no, it's the, you know, it's the dude.
It's the old thing. Right.
Whatever.
That's one lethal sausage you got there.
Chick nugget fans needed.
It should say chicken. I screwed that up.
I can't be blamed for that one.
No, that's my fault. Chinese kids are way into cat snorting.
Therapy Thursday and more on this episode of The Morning Stream.
Everyone thinks that his own manners are all right, even if they aren't perfect. And that being correct only helps to spoil fun. Let us compare what these students do and don't do with what we think is right.
The Morning Stream. Garbler-gibler-g.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TMS. This is TMS for January 18th, 2018. Yeah, that's right. 1-18-18.
Whoa.
That's
whoa,
cool.
When will that ever happen again in our lives? Never.
Never again.
Never.
Well, wait, hold on.
No, never, because the unless we live for 100 more years, we won't ever see another 18.
Yeah, it won't happen in our lifetime, right? It'd be 3,018 before people see it.
Right, exactly. Well, no, it'd be 2118.
Oh, 20, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Keep forgetting about that pesky second digit.
Yeah, we got 10 more of those before.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be us doing it. Won't be us announcing it. It's my thinking. Could be wrong.
Right.
But no. Unless they figure out a way to dramatically extend our lives. Probably not going to happen. Well, that's a maudlin way to start the show, isn't it?
Jeez, why would you do that?
I did that. I don't know what I'm thinking. It's all right. Listen, it's Thursday. That means all the Thursday misgivings. all the fun stuff. All the things that we like to do on Thursday. And we'd like to welcome you all back, our big, happy TMS family. Hello, welcome. Live listeners. A bunch of live people I've not seen on before. A bunch of new names today. I don't know what that's about.
Oh, cool.
But I like that.
Well, that's good. Welcome.
Yeah,
welcome.
I like that. I don't know what that's about, though. It's weird. Some of them are like, oh, listen to the instance in the first TMS. I'm so excited.
I just saw that one, too. That's funny. Yeah, who is that? That was, we're gonna like, call them out. As
Jim,
being
Jim Bob Flamboyant Man.
New peep. It is,
Eric Cheese Fart Liver Spot.
Yes, that's exactly it.
It's not it. I don't know where it is. It's,
the chat, it's so far up the thing.
The chat has archived his comment, but anyway, welcome to the show.
Exactly. Welcome. Welcome.
It's good to have you here. We got a lot to talk about. And well, Wendy gets here, we have perhaps the longest email we've ever had, but I think I'm up to the challenge.
So. I read through that thing and I couldn't see a way to edit that down. I think all of it is so key.
Yeah.
And pertinent and wow,
it's needed. So
it's needed. Yeah.
If I tried to edit it, I feel like I'd be losing something. So we're not going to edit it. We're just gonna we're gonna let that live and breathe. But we'll get to that later in the show. Right now, I want to tell you a funny thing. Brian sent this over via text this morning. I would normally say via, but today I said via, and I don't know why.
Via.
I said via.
Yes. It's and like I think it came. I want to say it came from TV Zgon, by the way.
No, that's where it originated. Okay. Cool.
Yes. Yep.
In that case. Here's what we've got. So, Pornhub has some fun with statistics. They do this a lot. Something will come around and they'll say, oh, guess what? The most popular porn thing this year was, and it was Overwatch porn or whatever, right?
Right, the most searched for terms in your city, and it's, Overwatch porn.
Yep, that's the ones. That's the ones. So they did this again, but where this gets interesting, and the reason we're bringing it up is this is data that they're showing during the false missile alert in Hawaii.
Right.
So last week, was it? We haven't really talked about it on the show.
It's earlier this week. Was it a Sunday?
Sunday.
Or the weekend or something? Oh, boy. The days are a blur. Scott, I don't know if that's happening with you approaching old age, but the days for me are going
they're going really fast. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. I realized that, like, I used to think 2 years was the longest amount of time in the world. It's not. It's nothing now. It's nothing.
No, I know. Exactly.
It's nothing. It's just like two Star Wars movies. That's it.
Right. I mean, it would be, oh my God, I can't believe the next Star Wars movie isn't coming out for another 2 years. And now it's like, oh, another Star Wars movie in May? We just had one. And
yeah,
this is going to be here before we know it. Like, it's less than a month to the next Marvel movie. And that blows my mind.
Yeah. Time is compressed. It's super weird.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, so here's the deal. They had this false missile alert. It was some UI problem. An employee sent out the one that you would send when a real ballistic missile is heading to the island. And everybody panicked and did as the message said, which was seek shelter. And people were stranded in places. And a lot of panic ensued. People went from normal daily routine to, oh, my gosh, where's my family? I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that there's also people who use porn at that point of the day. And they have some they're pretty funny stats. And by the way, this is at 9:01 a.m., which I think is significant because 9:01 a.m. is a weird. I mean, I don't want to judge. It's a weird time of day for people to be doing their proclivities.
I don't know. You get in there, you show up at your office. You know, you walk in. Hi, Melissa up at the front desk. Just another day, another dollar. Am I right?
Yeah.
Go back to your office. You close the door. Oh, no, you maybe go out and get your coffee.
Yeah.
Then you go back to your office, close the door, pull the little blinds that they have on that little strip of glass where people can peek in and see if you're at your desk.
This is an awful detailed account that you're giving.
So, my boss.
Man.
I think it's okay for me to talk about this now, but my boss, now, full disclosure, never me.
No, not you. Not you.
I certainly stuff would get passed around the office that had, you know, nudity on it, and we'd check it out and go, oh, look at that. But, you know,
right.
none of what I'm describing.
Right.
But anyway, he basically had said, hey, you know, can you figure out what's going on with our bandwidth? You know, we it seems like there are times during the day, and this is before, like, there was just big honking bandwidth coming down. We were all sharing like the equivalent of a DSL line or something.
Sure, sure.
And
this is 90s, like mid 90s. You're lucky to have it, sort of thing. Yeah,
that's right. And he said, "Can you figure out where all this bandwidth is going?" And this was my direct boss, not the CEO of the company. So they did this. You know, this guy named what was his name? Nick. Okay. Nick worked in IT.
Okay.
Decided to do a little, you know, like a week long analysis of the traffic and stuff like that, and after the week was up, he said, all right, well, you know, here's what we got. A few porn sites that people are visiting and stuff like that, and a lot of those porn sites seem to be coming from the CEO's office.
Yeah,
not the guy who commissioned the study, but his basically his right hand man commissioned the study
commissioned the nationwide study.
So we said, oh, we've got to tell him. Can I tell him? You know, everybody said, oh, let me tell him. So we go in, you know, somebody goes in the CEO's office, and I hear about this secondhand, says, Stafford asked for us to take a look at where our bandwidth is going, and it seems like there's a lot of porn traffic coming from your office. Is somebody else using your computer? Is it like this? No, everybody gets 2 15-minute breaks per day.
That's a pretty good answer.
Everybody gets 2 15-minute breaks per day.
That's a pretty good answer. That's pretty funny.
Anyway.
I figured he'd dig in. So I had a similar experience at the job I was at, and it was in the same era, talking like 96, 97, something like that.
Right.
We had a T1 line or something.
Right.
And that seemed fast at the time, but now it's just garbage. It was like a meg and a half or something. And it was the same deal, except it was the CEO's father who he employed there because... You know how that is sometimes. It's like, dad needs a place to be. He can't be kicking around the house. I need to hire dad and have him have a job that means nothing. And that's kind of what this guy's job was. He was head of cable engineering or something, which is silly because we didn't really need it. Like, it was just a dumb job. But anyway, that guy, same deal. We were noticing weird internet traffic. Same exact thing. But the worst of that was somebody went into his office, a girl, I think.
Mm-hmm.
To say, hey, the internet's going to be pulled down while we're doing some testing or something. She opens the door, and there he is in there. Let's say strumming the old fiddle is what he was doing.
In flagrato, what's the term? In fuego?
Is that the word? I don't know.
Fidelity delecto or something like that. Something like that.
So he was in there doing that, and we caught him, and then he denied it, though. He kept saying, oh, no, that's not what was going on. I was just, she's like, her account of it was like, there were like, it's like an interracial couple or something going on the screen, and he was a known bigot, like a huge, again, the whole doth protest too much really kicked in the 90s
right,
for me.
But that's a weird one to be like, to be against, like to be bigoted or racist.
Yeah.
But then it comes out that your doth protest too much is like, oh no, he's actually a good person because he watches interracial porn.
Yeah, he's way into interracial porn as it turned out, despite
the
fact.
Some of my favorite porn stars are black. big fan of the black porn stars.
Well, it's funny you say that because he is a hardcore Trumper man. Anyway, he's still alive, still with us. But anyway, so he's in there, and he's in his, like, 60s when this is happening. And so he denied it. That was the difference. Yeah. So what he claimed was, I was looking at the news site, and I was adjusting myself. She doesn't know what she's talking. She's basically throwing her under the bus. And we were like, okay, Grandpa, whatever. You were in there doodling the diddly. Oh, anyway, geez. The point is, so here's the deal.
Yeah. And for the people in the audience who say, oh, Brian doth protest too much, saying, oh, you never did that, never did that. Listen, I had an office that with the door that could close. I also had one of those little strip windows that went vertically next to the door. I did not have blinds on it, so I could not. There's no way that I would ever do that at work without.
Also, I just freaking never do it at work. Or else then people talk
about
it.
Yeah, well, there's that too, I guess. I could have just...
Yeah, and then also, just like, years later, somebody be talking about you in 2018 on a podcast about how you're looking at interracial porn. Like, that stuff follows you, man.
Exactly. You can't shake it.
No, it's like a... I don't know what it's like. You can't shake it. So, so here's the deal. People panicked, right? And this thing happened right at 8:23 a.m., or no, sorry, just before that, just before 8:23 a.m., let's see, incoming missile alert issued 8:07 a.m.
8:07 a.m. was the first, the first thing.
The false alarm was issued 8:45, so it took them a while,
right?
Which is kind of nuts, by the way.
Yeah, it took them like over half an hour. The reports were all about half an hour, but it's like a little bit more than that, about 38 minutes.
So here's the weird bit, and Chad, I'll show you this data.
The graph is the best.
Yeah, here's this graph. Let me shut Chad down there. Okay, so you can see this graph. They had a 77% maximum drop in Pornhub traffic at 8:23 is where the lowest point happened. But you can see right here, we've got a little a huge drop during the panic. Everyone thinks their lives are over.
Which, thank goodness, right? Like, you'd hate to think that, hey, everybody, missile coming, seek shelter. Time to masturbate like a furious monkey.
Right. Get it over with. Now, this is only 80% of the people left, so there's still 20% hanging around. And my thinking was, wow, they're really committed. Or they just didn't know about the alert. They probably just didn't know.
I'm thinking they didn't know about the alert.
Right.
Because I think, you know, anybody in their right mind maybe would say, oh, okay, well, time to stop watching the stepmother porn. And
exactly.
Maybe go find a bomb shelter or something.
But right after the correction, the false alarm correction... 48% spike in traffic in the positive range, meaning more people logged in. Now, what is that about? Because is that just the porniest among us going, oh, phew, you know, that was a close call. I'm going to go blow off some steam by looking at the porns.
It's probably that, like a little stress reliever kind of thing. It's the equivalent of, phew.
That's so weird to me.
Everybody, we're not going to die. Let's celebrate.
I'd be hugging my kids. I'd be like going, all right, let's go outside, everybody, and enjoy the Hawaiian weather. Like, I would not. This is the last place I'd go at 9:01 a.m. I can't emphasize enough why that time seems nuts to me. Like, it's like people who drink it at breakfast. You know,
can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning, Scott.
That's how the old phrase goes, isn't it?
Yep.
Anyway, it's pretty great.
Besides, I mean, how much of the traffic is not like, you know, the working stiffs in Hawaii who have their 9-to-5 jobs and are doing this 1 minute after.
Oh, good
after
point.
After they get to their jobs, but also people vacationing that, lonely Frank business traveler. Well, I've got a few minutes here before my next meeting. I think I'll head back to the room at the Marriott Inn and Suites.
I mean, I would be going, oh, man, that was near life and death. That was as close as I've been to being annihilated. I'm going to go do new things. I'm going to change my path in life. Certainly the last thing from, I would think the last thing from most people's minds would be, nah, back to the porn. Like, I don't know why that seems so strange to me. But
just, it would be great to see if the graph is like people coming back after the 8:07 alert, right? Like, oh gosh, my life is in danger. I'm shutting down Pornhub and I'm going to go, you know, hug the family and do all those, get my bucket list going here.
Yeah.
And then come back. All right, where was I?
Hey Siri, where was I?
Where was I?
Oh shoot, shut up phone. My phone went off. Hold on. Sorry. Okay. Stop. I hate that. Okay. No, stop. Okay, stop. Oh my gosh. Let's pause.
Jeez.
She's freaking out. She really wants to help me today. I don't know what her
name is. Oh, because you said her name.
I guess so. Why isn't my phone charged? That's weird. Did my charger not work last night? All right, whatever. That's not important. Hey, I got a question for you, though.
Ask away.
Let me ask first the question. Do you like Elton John?
I do like Elton John. I like, you know, it's the total music nerd phrase that pays, but I really like his older stuff more than his newer stuff, but I do really like his older stuff. Madman Across the River, Leave On. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that whole era with Tiny Dancer, Leave On, before... In the turning point for me, because I even like the I'm Still Standing and Nikita is still one of my favorite songs ever.
That's all 80s stuff, right? 80s?
What's that?
That was
80s. Okay. But it was when he decided he was just going to recycle the song about Marilyn Monroe and use it for Princess Diana. Mm-hmm. That was kind of like really? You couldn't write something new for Princess Diana? What, you know, basically, sorry, Marilyn, your time's up. Mm-hmm. We're moving on to somebody else.
Yeah.
That was kind of a turning point for me.
But that was a little bit weird. And I think you're probably not alone there. Probably most people would say, I really like his early stuff and not so much with the later things. Somebody today was extolling the virtues of the 80s era stuff, and others were telling me how the 80s stuff was the worst and ruined it. But for the most part, a lot of people like Elton John, especially the early music. Now,
sure.
That being said, I had the audacity, I suppose, of getting on Twitter this morning and saying I didn't think there was an Elton John song that I liked.
Oh, no. Really?
And I'm going to hold to it. I actually don't like. There are a few covers of his songs that I like. Like, I like how it's included in the soundtrack for Moulin Rouge and a few other things like that. But I don't think... And that's why I'm bringing this up here, because maybe you can convince me otherwise or dial me back some. But I don't think there's an Elton John song that I actually like or that I wouldn't trade out for anything else at any given time.
You're killing me, man.
I know. And a lot of people
are
upset.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I've got so many people upset on Twitter about this. They're like, I'm a little surprised by the response, because all it was me saying, I was very clear this was my opinion. It wasn't me going, you're all idiots if you like Elton John music. It wasn't like that.
Right, right, right.
It was just me saying, hey, I don't...
I mean, you know, you're free to like what you like and what you don't like.
Of course. People still have a hard time not jumping all over you when you have a strong opinion like that, but it wasn't even that strong. But, like, here's my exact quote, okay? I said this.
Okay.
I even started it kind of with bad sentence structure. I said, I mean, if I'm honest, I don't think there's an Elton John song that I actually like. That's the entire statement.
Okay.
And the replies have been fast and furious, mostly furious. So, convince me I'm wrong, Brian. Okay, what do we got there? I hear something. No more of your dog. Yeah, it's cutting out. I can't hear it.
Is Discord doing that crap again?
Yeah, it's doing it again. Is it Discord doing that?
It is Discord doing that, because Hammond and I ran into that same problem when we were just having a Discord conversation without it being streamed or recorded or anything like that.
Yeah, it would do that too.
All right, well, what I'm playing is Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me, which is, man, between that and Leave On, those two might be my two favorite Elton John songs. So why don't you pull it up on your side? Pull up Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me.
All right, I'll play a little bit of this. This is the one you're going to convince me with, huh?
This is the one I'm going to convince you of.
Sun go down on me. Okay, found it. Okay, here we go. Oh, that's a. I don't want to play the George Michael version, or is that?
No,
they
no,
do
play
edit
the
that
John
later.
Version because okay. That's kind of what we're talking about here.
Right. All right.
You've already said that you're okay with covers of Elton John, which kind of blows my mind.
Yes, this is. I hate this song.
What?
Yeah, I don't like this song. Here, let me.
How can you hate this song?
Let me go a little further in it. Yeah, I hate that song. I don't like that song at all.
Really?
Yeah, I really don't like it.
Oh my gosh, it feels like that's like kind of one of the universal truths, right? Like you know, everybody agrees that bacon is good and Don't Let the Sun Go Down on Me is the is the best Elton John song. All right, let's try one more. Leave on.
Okay.
Can I throw out a theory?
Go ahead.
You have your dislike. Not really a dislike, but your Well, yeah, you guess you basically said you don't like any Elton John song, or you don't...
I don't like any of them.
Okay.
I mean, that I know of. That's why I guess
I'm
looking...
Could it come from the fact... Oh, yeah, Daniel's another good one. Could it come from the fact that your mom kind of looks like Elton John?
All right, she totally looks like Elton John now. Like, the current Elton John is my mom. Yeah. It looks just like my mom. But I don't think so. not 100% that. It may be a piece of it, but I didn't like it when I was younger. And I like the era that it comes from.
Yeah.
Like the prime Elton John 70s stuff is my zone. I love that era of music.
Yeah, that blows my mind. It's like, I mean, I can understand not liking Don't Go Breaking My Heart because, you know,
it sucks.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Kind of sucks. Crocodile Rock,
yeah.
But I mean, Levon, Daniel, Someone Saved My Life Tonight, another great one.
Well, let's try a little Levon here. Let's
all go right.
Spends his days counting.
All right, maybe I'll give you a Levon. Maybe. That's my, of all the songs, you know, maybe Levon's the closest to the one I like the most. If I
okay,
have
okay, now
pick
here's
one.
What I'd like you to do. Yeah. Just a little bit of homework. It's going to take you 4 minutes at the end of the show, like after the show's over. 5 minutes and 22 seconds is how long it's going to take you.
All right.
Pull up Levon. And read the lyrics while you're listening to the song.
Okay.
Because aside from, you know, he's an amazing piano player, of course. He's a great musician, great arranger. But man, in the 70s, his lyrics were just on fire. Like
really?
The stories he'd tell, Tiny Dancer, the story that you know, you get from listening to that, you're thinking this kind of cheap motel kind of thing, you know, staying on the road or whatever, and you're seeing the headlights go by on the highway, and they're kind of hitting the curtains of the cheap motel that's right off the side of the highway. It's like a storytelling 101.
Okay,
it's fantastic.
All right, I'll admit I've never given his lyrics the probably the proper attention that they've deserved. I will tell you what I think is my least favorite Elton John song, and you can.
Oh, let me see if I can guess. Hold on a second.
All right. See if you can guess.
Give me an era because there's a.
I will tell you it's old, so it's like 70s. It's not from Yellow Brick Road,
really?
Though.
Okay.
Yeah. I will say it's not from that.
But 70s, yeah. Philadelphia Freedom.
No, that's a bad one too, though. Here I'll play
Benny
it for
and
you.
Benny and the Jets. Benny and the Jets.
I also hate Benny and the Jets, but that's not it. Oh, I hate Benny and the Jets. That might be it, actually. Ugh, I hate it.
Oh, you're not going to tell me Rocket Man.
No. Rocket Man has its place. But also, Rocket Man is better for me because of Moulin Rouge. Like, I actually think of it higher because of that.
Oh, really?
Because
I thought your song was the one they used for Moulin Rouge. Did they also use Rocket Man?
What am I thinking of, then? You're right.
This is your song.
No, you're right. You're right. Rocket Man, I'm thinking of something else. Maybe I'm thinking of Shatner. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that makes Rocket Man a lot better, too.
Yeah, it does. All right, so here it is. If you can guess what it is. Okay. Here's the start of it. Okay, why is it? Okay.
Oh, Honky Cat.
I hate Honky Cat. Hate it.
Yeah.
All right, so all that being said, no one's going to change
ragtime.
My mind.
I mean, it's like a little ragtimey song. You have a little straw, one of those styrofoam flat-brimmed hats and a red vest, and you're, you know, that's what Honky Cat is. It's like a dude playing a piano, you know, in a milkshake bar is what he's doing.
It always felt like me, like he was going, all right, Billy Joel, I'll do one too. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah, well, okay, that's funny you say that, because I was going to say, well, what about Billy Joel? Because I feel like Billy Joel and Elton John are kind of cut from the same cloth, very much so.
Yeah, he's like an American Billy or Elton John. I agree. But I like his music better, and I don't know why. Huh. Don't know why. Like, I really like Glass Houses. I really like all that era, all that stuff. I didn't like Uptown Girl sucks. That's a terrible song.
Okay, good. All right. Good. Well, then. Yeah. One of the other universal truths is accepted here.
But like, even the cheesy stuff, Piano Man and stuff, I like that stuff. Like, I'm into that. But you're right. I never really thought about it before, but those two are kind of analogs for each other, aren't they? They're kind of
where does it stop for you, the Billy Joel? Like, is there I can tell you a distinct point. Love, We Didn't Start the Fire, but River of Dreams.
That's so bad.
We didn't start the fire.
I hate that song.
So that's where it stops for
that's
you.
That must be where it stops for me. If you go to his Greatest Hits Volume 1.
Yeah. Where do you switch to another album?
I like New York State of Mind.
Oh, yeah. Good Night Saigon.
Yeah. Only the Good Die Young's good.
And then we were Brandon Eddie waving goodbye. Oh, man. Holy crap. What a great.
It's a great album. A great compilation. I don't think I like Big Shot very much.
Oh, come on now. 52nd Street.
Let's see.
That whole
Big Shot's all right. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. Well, look.
Pressure, Allentown.
I like tell Allentown.
Her about it. There's almost a defining
one. Tell her about it. I don't like that song. But yeah. I do like Allentown. Allentown's great. I feel like if I saw him in concert, I'd want him to do nothing but that old stuff.
But actually, with the exception of Uptown Girl, not a single bad track on there for me. Captain Jack, Say Goodbye to Hollywood. So this is it's funny. I used to work at a candy store in 85, 86. Yeah. I worked for a candy store called Taste the Good Life, and it was owned by a guy whose last name was Good Life.
Mm. Really?
Now that I say that, sounds kind of skeevy.
Yeah, it totally does. Yeah.
Anyway, we had there was like a big baby grand piano inside there, and we sold expensive truffles, like dollar something truffles and ice cream gelato and stuff like that. It was a higher end candy store.
Sure.
And he had a CD system, a CD stereo system set up in the back, and it would also play music outside as well. And he says, Brian, you can't bring any of your own music here. You can't bring, because at the time I was listening to stuff like Howard Jones and Yellow, and that's not very chocolatey vibe to it.
No.
But he did have the Billy Joel Greatest Hits Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Yeah.
And it seemed like that was in that little sliver of Venn diagram of the stuff that he had, which is a lot of instrumental jazz and stuff like that, and the stuff I liked. So that CD got played.
Probably
at least every time I had a shift, like it was over and over and over.
He probably got a little tired of that after a while.
I did get a little tired of it, but you know what? I could listen to all these songs right now.
Well,
Only the Good Die Young. Oh,
yeah, it's a good song.
Scenes from Italian Restaurant might be my favorite.
It's really good. Now Zardine in the chat room says, "I'm not a fan of Elton John, but he hates Madonna more than me, so he's okay in my book." Does he hate Madonna?
Does he hate Madonna? Really?
I didn't know about that. Huh. I had no idea. Also, some people are trying to throw some shade on Phil Collins. They can all bite me. I love Phil Collins. No problem.
Yeah, up until, what was that doo-wop cover that he did?
Dude, his best work is the Tarzan soundtrack. It's so good. It's so good.
This is where we part ways. This is where we part ways, my friend.
There is some really good music on that Tarzan soundtrack. It's fantastic.
You'll be in my heart. No, we're done. We're done. Yeah, you can't hurry love. That was the one. That was, I think, it for me. It was like, all right. Yeah.
I think, Phil Collins.
I kind of like You Can't Hurry Love, but come on, In the Air Tonight, and the Genesis stuff that he did, Abacab, and
he had some Mama. Things. What was the deal where it was? There's a good Disturbed cover of it where that's all claymation.
Land of Confusion.
Land of Confusion's fantastic. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. Listen, Phil Collins,
let's go round.
Underrated as someone who was probably never underrated. I think people always like Phil Collins, but I don't know when people broke with him. I think he's great. Nothing wrong with that guy. He's awesome. Studio.
No jacket required, by the way, was the album that I'd listened to when I walked. I wonder how many miles it was, because I would either ride my bike or walk. I didn't have a car when I was working at the candy store, but it was quite a distance away. Mm. And not Face Value, but No Jacket Required was the album that I would listen to as I walked back and forth on my Walkman. And that's the one with Sue Studio,
yeah,
and Take Me Home, and Billy, Don't You Lose That Number.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, those are the days. He was great. He was a staple of our listening pleasure back then. Man. All right. Well, all right. Anyway, I think we've solved it. We fixed this problem. It's no longer an issue.
Now, do you remember? Did you write it down? What's your homework after the show today?
I'm going to listen to some Elton John music with the lyric sheets in front of me.
You're going to listen to one specific song. You're going to listen to Leave On,
right?
And I'll open it. Either Leave On or Tiny Dancer, but you're going to read the lyrics while you listen to
okay.
it.
Okay. All right. I like Leave On. Of all his songs, I like Leave On the most. So I think I'll spend a little time with that, and then maybe I'll try the other one. I'll try the Tiny Dancer. I assume that's about a little tiny person that can dance, right? A little tiny.
It's about a little person that can dance.
Great, great. That's what I want.
No, it's about. I don't know how much of this I like fill in the blanks from like the almost famous bus scene and stuff, but it's like about a woman who travels with the band, and she fixes their you know, the clothes and stuff when they're on stage, and they rip something or. Mm-hmm. Or sews new stuff on their clothes, and she travels on the tour bus with the band, and they stay in a seedy motel and see the headlights hitting the curtains and stuff.
Yeah.
It's just such a, you know, how much of that is me just visualizing, or how much of that is the?
Well, that's a sign of good lyrical structure, right? That helps your imagination go places. I get that.
Oh, it totally is. Yes, exactly.
Don't forget this though. This is real good right here. I'm gonna play. That's right, Phil Collins. Let's do it, buddy. Dude, it's a great movie soundtrack. Now, it may not be great Phil Collins, but it's great. It's a great choice to have him do the Tarzan soundtrack. It's fantastic.
Because when I think Tarzan, I think Phil Collins.
Well, I mean, Lion King, you can say that about Elton John. And I hate that Elton John soundtrack.
Hold on, you believe it.
Oh, I love that.
Like no other.
That's a good
song.
Before
you know it, you'll be on your knees.
Yep, that's how it goes.
Yeah, all right. Anyway.
Anyway, there it is. Hope you all enjoyed that. Now, enjoy this. Let's do the news, brought to you by
Core. Hey, Scott, why is last night's episode of Core a must listen?
Well, let me tell you. So, about an hour before showtime, Bo says, hey, can you guys quickly record a couple lines for us? And we said, yeah, we'll do that. And I go, what are you doing? He goes, well, I just have this idea. Because I don't know if you saw this. It got carried everywhere on all the gaming blogs and stuff. But Blizzard sort of out of nowhere released an anime intro thing, little short film that's all anime, like traditional drawn anime style, giant robot Gundam looking mecha versions of these skins that they're putting out. They put out some skins for Tyrael and Rhaegar and Abathur that look like mecha style Gundam, super Gundam, you know, style cartoon stuff.
Oh, cool!
And they're super cool. So to promote that, they put out this video, and it is so good that it should just straight up be a Saturday morning cartoon. It's freaking fantastic. So you need to see it today sometime when you get a chance. What Bo did was took some of that music and some of the sound effects from it and made a Saturday morning kids commercial for toys and used our voices in it. And he did all of this like in real time, like it took him no time, I should say, to do it. So I'm just going to play this intro, okay? I want you to hear this introduction.
The clip, right, from Core. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you guys got to hear this thing. This is pretty great. So this is from Core. Bo made this. It's at the top of episode 113. So if you go listen to the show at heroesforyou.com, you'll get to hear it. But just imagine yourself a kid in the 80s, Saturday morning, you're watching, I don't know what you're watching, Star Blazers or something, and a commercial comes on for the following product. Here you go.
Now you too can bring the metal and fury to your living room with your favorite hero.
Mecha Battle Storm.
Introducing Mecha-Tyrael.
Mecha-Tyrael.
Justice protocols initiated.
Mecha Tacita.
It's time to kick some afterburner.
Optimus Ringer.
Into a healing fountain before you bleed out.
Forces augmented.
Oh no, it's Abathur.
I'll handle this.
But you can't beat all three of them by yourself, Tommy.
I am justice itself.
Death. Acceptable outcome.
Hey, where's my healing, Billy?
You're a feeding piece of shit, Tommy.
Mecha Battlestorm!
From Blizzard.
Ages 3 and up. Xenophile Abathur contains pieces that are choking hazards for young children. Batteries sold separately.
Pretty great, right?
That's awesome. Yeah. It sounds like professionally made.
Yeah, he made it in like no time. He is now legend. Bo Schwartz is legend. And if you haven't heard that show, you should listen to it anyway because we have a lot of fun on there. But secondarily, that was really great last night, and he blew our minds. And Brian, when you get some time today, go watch watch that video I'm talking about. It'll make you wish Blizzard made a Saturday morning cartoon about Heroes of the Storm.
God, I'm sure I will. Yeah, totally. I'll totally check it out. That'll be my homework. You're going to go listen to Levon or Tiny Dancer. I guess now Tiny Dancer is the one, and I'm going to watch that anime video.
Okay, we both have homework. Blizzard. This is great.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, and that was John and I being the kids. We were Timmy and Tommy.
Yeah.
So people know. Let's get into it here. Nintendo launched, or didn't launch, but announced this weird-ass new thing. It's called Labo, and it's a bizarre new Switch game / DIY cardboard accessory deal. It's basically like the most creative thing I can think of that you could do with a console.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's super cool. A lot of people are poo-pooing it, but I've noticed those people are old and lame. And kids are way excited because that's who this is aimed for.
How could somebody poo-poo that? Like, it's making real-world objects that interact with your video game thing instead of just sitting staring blindly at a little video game. Like, you're building and constructing little pianos and robot suits and stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. In fact, when they first started doing it, I thought, oh, okay, a piano, that's cool. But then they really got going, and I was like, oh, my gosh, that is like a little remote-controlled car that guy's got, like... Yeah. How is this even working? Like, it's super cool. If you haven't seen the trailer from yesterday's reveal, you should go watch it. These are going to be like anywhere between $65 and $70. The $60-something one comes with a few things you can build. The other one I mentioned at $70 is like the full robot one. There's not a ton of details, but you'll be able to do things like fish, play piano, race a bike, wreak havoc as a giant robot. All of this is done is by detaching Joy-Cons from the Switch itself and using cardboard to construct accessories like this. And they work. They freaking work.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing crazy.
Yeah. That just their base one, like the $69.99 one. So I'm looking at it right now.
Right.
And I'm totally pre-ordering this. Yeah. But like, you know, it's got, all right, the two little remote control cars, which look like little monsters with their teeth in the ground and stuff.
Yeah.
A fishing rod game, a house, a motorbike, and then that piano thing.
Yep.
They could have easily like sold each one of those, you know, for $30 or something. I don't want to give them any ideas, but
yeah,
the thing's insane. It's like so.
Yeah. For people that are like, oh, this is, I'm not paying $60 for a chunk of cardboard. That's not what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're paying $60 for a bunch of cardboard and for the other stuff that comes with it to make it work, and right. A game, like actual software. And it's not always a game. Sometimes it's just like, how do I control these little cars? And here's the interface on the Switch to do that or whatever, and you use the touchscreen for it. But trust me, watch the video. If you're listening to this and you're skeptical and you're like, what is this weird gimmick? It seems really super rad.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and it really feeds, I think it feeds well into the brains of your average, you know, 8 to 12-year-old who's super into making things, or they've been in Minecraft for years, or they just, you know, their heroes are now YouTubers that make stuff like Bill and other people like that.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
This is perfect for that.
Because so. I can see some kids saying, oh, this is really cool. I'm going to get the cardboard, you know, robot kit and build that. And then I'm going to see if I can make the same thing out of foam and make it look, you know, really cool and beef it up. I mean, that's my first thought is like, oh, wow, I could totally... You know, get the variety kit and remake the piano using 3D printing.
Yeah, you could do it all. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like some of it requires like the cars where they're just like teeth on the ground. They're not actually wheels. Mm-hmm. They rely on the vibration of the controllers for movement, right. And turning left and right depends on how intense one controller is vibrating versus the other. So that you wouldn't be able to do very well with 3D printed alternatives. But like the robot suit the kid's wearing, you can 3D print that thing.
Easily.
Like,
yeah.
Totally. So I, that's one thing I am really looking forward to is a bunch of hacker people are going to go, actually, you know what I can do? And they're going to take it to like the 10th degree. It's going to be, mm-hmm. it's a cool idea. It's a really cool idea.
It's totally cool. And I imagine that, you know, they're going to rely on third party developers as well to like come up with new ways to do this. Like coming up with some cool like ski slope thing where, you know, you've got, you know, little cardboard ski poles or something, and the Joy-Cons fit in there, and you're doing that sort of mm-hmm. thing. I mean, kind of like they did this kind of with the Wii Fit.
Sure.
But, God, how cool is this?
It's pretty neat. It's pretty yeah. neat. I at first didn't know quite what to think of it. I was kind of blown away because I didn't see this coming. Nobody did, really. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But as an additional thing that the Switch is into, I think this is a great idea. And it's yeah. and it feels like a long time... Not some 20-something fresh out of college. I know what kids want today. It's all Snapchat and freaking jibby-jibby. This is some older guys that have been with Nintendo in Japan for like 30 years of their career. And they're like, you know, we're going to... They're thinking outside the box and thinking of like toy stuff. And what is something like a kid would just like freak out about? This is it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is it.
For sure.
I don't know. I was just describing those 20-year-olds kind of badly, but you know what I mean.
No, I'm totally all over this. I can't wait to order one myself.
Wii Fit. Remember this?
Wii Fit is it.
Is it. That was actually the, that was Wii Sports, I guess.
I thought it was Wii Fit. Oh, when you just
played the thing I just played was Wii Sports, yeah. Yeah. Let's see what else. There was a butcher. Once there was a butcher.
Was there a baker and a candlestick maker as well?
Nope, just a butcher.
Okay.
And his sausage. he got trapped in a freezer, used his sausage to bash his way out. Now, your dirty little minds thinks you're all thinking he used his wiener. No. He used a packed sausage. it says,
he also used the meat in the freezer.
A British butcher got locked in a freezer. It says he was saved by a frozen sausage that he then used as a battering ram. Chris McCabe said he became trapped in the walk-in freezer in his shop on Totnes, southwest England, last month. When wind blew the door shut, the safety button on the to open the door had frozen in the negative 20 degree Celsius conditions, negative 4 Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. McCabe said he tried unsuccessfully to kick the button free before picking up a 1.5 kilogram, or 3.3 pound in our dumb way of measuring things, black pudding, a form of blood sausage.
I remember killing a lot of black pudding in D&D. Isn't that one of like the little minions you take out real easy?
The little cubes. Yeah.
Yeah.
it says, whoops, I skipped. My spreadsheet freaked out. He said he told the website Devon Live. Really? Anyway, that he used the meaty tube.
Meaty tubes.
Meaty tubes. Like a battering ram, and managed to unstick the button after several blows. The grateful butcher told the Daily Mirror, black pudding saved my life without a doubt. That's a blood pudding, right? They said that earlier. Gross.
Blood pudding, yeah.
You ever had that? Ever eaten a blood pudding?
Probably I have, yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up with a British side of my family, and I'm sure my dad at some point probably wanted me to try some traditional blood pudding.
Is it real blood? Do we know? Is it blood?
I think so, yeah.
Okay,
I think
all right. This is how I'd say
it's more of a bready kind of thing, as opposed to like Jell-O pudding kind of thing.
This is what I would say. Blood. I'd say it that way. Blood. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was me playing Resident Evil 7.
I need to get back in there with the PSVR and play that some more.
Game scares the shit out of me. I don't know if I can do it again. All right, moving on here. Good job to that guy. Well done. Hey, there's a job posting. If anyone looking for a job, I got some good news for you. There's a job posting for chicken nugget connoisseur.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
British-based B&M budget retailer posted to its website, just like a good steak, the opportunity is rare, they say. Boy, all these food references. The job opening is for a chicken nugget connoisseur, and the candidate who gets the job will receive a 25-pound voucher every month to spend on fresh and frozen food in their local B&M store. The job requires the nugget eater to share feedback with B&M. So they're going to pay them to eat nuggets.
Are they coming out with enough variety of chicken nuggets that
that you need somebody to constantly be like, oh, yes, the sour cream and chive chicken nuggets are delicious, but maybe we'll avoid the blood pudding flavor.
Maybe. I mean, it's B&M. Isn't that store stand for bowel and movement? I don't know.
I don't know what B&M stands for.
It says, so what kind of experience does one need for the job? And it's posting. This is what they said. Getting the 20 share box of nuggets from McDonald's and keeping them for yourself. Being the first in the office kitchen whenever someone says there's cake. These are all rules of working there.
Right. This is your CV, basically.
It says that time you tripped and fell at a buffet and saved the plate before yourself. Going to an event or party because there is free food, you value the importance of a fish finger sandwich in life. What's that?
Fish finger sandwich? It's like chicken fingers, like little fish sticks, like making a fish stick sandwich. Like a po' boy. Oh, come on. You've never had a po' boy?
I have, but not with a fish stick in it. Like, I've had real shrimp and fried catfish and stuff that's good, not a fish stick. Ugh. Fish sticks are gross, dude. There's like, you know that shit on the floor and Dangerous Catch or whatever that show is? Like Mike Rowe narrates? It's guy just about got a cage to the head. Oh, whoopsie-doo. And then they got all that poo on the floor from all the fish scraping. They take that, put it in a bucket and sell that, and that's a fish stick.
And that's your Mrs. Paul's, right? I mean, I think if you you can get decent fish sticks.
Yeah. Can you?
Sure.
All right.
Like, it's, you know, just like cod, like a cod fillet cut into a little strip so that your kid has something they can fit in a little dunker cup.
I used to have a really good fish stick line that Randy and I did back in the Instance, early Instance days, and I can't find it.
Yeah, what was it?
Yeah, you like a fish stick? Me? No, like a fish stick.
You like a fish stick? I do remember that.
The answer is I do not like it a fish stick. It does say this, though, one other thing. You can conduct a PowerPoint presentation on the reasoning behind curly fries being nicer than chips. Chips being french fries over there. Mm-hmm. And if you qualify, you could win this job opening at B&M. Good luck, British people.
Cool. Oh, man, I'd love it if a TMS listener got that job and they could just tell us about it.
Yeah, dude. I'd be all into that.
That's right.
Finally, we have a story here about China.
Mm-hmm.
China. Yeah, China. Let's see. Now I have to play it. That's going to bug me.
China.
There it is. This is about China. Apparently, the youth there, China's youth, are obsessed with sniffing cats. If you snore, the big deal is if you sniff your cat, you can spend hours with your cat, and it's just the best thing ever. They spend hours burying their face in the fluffy cat body and inhaling deeply while stroking its tummy.
Why is this even an article? This seems ridiculous.
Like, I don't know.
You got a fluffy cat. You don't tell me you don't do that with Rainer, right? You don't pick up the cat and just bury your face in spring. Oh, he was a little kitty.
You mean
I'm not Rainer. What's the new one?
Deckard. I like a little cuddle with the kitty, but I'm not spending hours going. By the way, those two are not getting along. The cat is fine. He's over it, but the dog won't make eye contact with it and just growls and stares in another direction. So if it's across the room and she saw it there, Rainer will turn her head and go, but she won't actually look at the cat. It's really weird.
So is it more Rainer is having a hard time with the cat, or is it that they both are kind of determining their territory and stuff?
Well, originally it seemed like it was on both sides because the cat would do the and then they swipe at her and all
puff
that.
Up.
Yeah. Doesn't do that now. Just kind of looks at her and goes, "You're a dumb dog," and the dog is the only one freaking out. So
I could so take you out if I want to. Wait till I'm 20 pounds heavier than you, and then I'll show you.
Anyway, Chinese people, they're weird. Hey, let's take a break. When we come back, Wendy will be here. We got a big old email to talk about, some fun stuff there. So come on back for that. In the meantime, let's take a little break with Brian, who's brought a bag of music.
I've brought a big bag of frozen sausages and music and fish sticks.
Great.
How about Erin McLaughlin? She performs under the name Ruby Force. This is her debut 10-song record. It is called Evolutionary War. It's a brand new album. And let's see, enlisting the collaboration of musical luminaries such as Elijah Thompson, who worked with Everest, Delta Spirit, and Father John Misty, Richard Swift, who's worked with the Black Keys, the Shins, the Arches, and Foxygen, and Frank Lenz, who's worked with Pedro the Lion. and Sean Watkins of Nickel Creek. So obviously, good pedigree for
this. Yeah, I love Nickel Creek. That's exciting.
Yeah, she's great. This is a song from the new album called Memory. Here is Ruby Force.
All right, we'll be right back.
It's been too long now, and I don't know where he's gone. Maybe to the bottom of the darkest sea, yes. But that don't matter much, 'cause I can bring him up if you let me. Close these eyes, memory. I've been hanging on, if only by one thought. I can hear his heartbeat singing me to sleep, yes. And just like that, I know if I ever let this go, nothing will catch me.
Everybody, I'm here to talk to you about a great way to start your day, finish your day, do something in the middle of your day. Yeah, that's right. I want you guys to hear all about RX Bar. We want to thank them for supporting the show. It's a whole food protein bar made with 100% whole ingredients, no BS, no added sugar, no colors, no added flavors or artificial flavors, no preservatives, no fillers, none of that stuff. Made from whole ingredients, few simple, clean ingredients that everybody can get down with. They all serve a purpose. For example, egg whites is the main source of its protein. It's easy for your body to absorb them, egg whites. RX bars are gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free. None of that stuff's going to bug you. No added sugar, no artificial colors. Like I said, no artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers. Great tasting with a variety of flavors. They come in 11 flavor varieties. I've liked every one I've had, especially any of the sweet stuff. Well, the savory's good, too. And if you like chocolate or fruit flavors, they've got a bar that's for you. These are real food ingredients, you guys. You can taste the cocoa and the real fruit and the spices like sea salt, that sort of stuff. They're ideal for breakfast on the go, snack at the office, throwing it in your bag, getting on the plane, tossing it in your backpack, going on a ride or a hike, pre- or post-workout snack, wherever you want it, you can do it. And I love it. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/TMS and use the promo code TMS. That's rxbar.com/TMS and the promo code TMS.
A week before the prom, Jerry asks Margaret to help Frank by finding out what Helen intends to wear to the dance. But Frank isn't thinking far enough ahead to realize that he will soon be selecting a corsage for Helen.
Newest top secret project.
The morning stream. I will feast on your soul.
We're back, everybody. Welcome back. Hi, Brian.
Okay. Oh, hi, Scott. I'm back, too.
I had to go pee, so I missed a lot of the song. I have to listen to it later.
Oh, yeah, it's good. It's a very sweet, mellow song. Maybe a little Lana Del Rey-ish.
Oh.
For those people who are expecting me to say esque, I didn't.
Yeah. Ah. Yeah. You know, I'll admit I kind of like her thing.
I do too.
I'm into her sound. I like
except for that new song that sounds just like Creep.
Oh, yeah, that one's a little not good.
Yeah, well, it's just...
Hi. Hello. Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Good. Who are you guys talking about?
We're talking about Lana Del Rey.
Lana Del Rey.
Yeah. Oh. Are you familiar with her work? She did that Summertime Sadness song that was very popular a number of years ago.
In video games?
Mm-hmm.
Video game.
And she got that weird lip thing going.
Little twang.
Yeah. Lip thing. I like her. She's cool.
Yeah, hey. She's got a great southern name.
She does. Lana Del Rey. You're right. Wendy does not. She has a stripper name. It's Wendy Dunford.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
My sister, Wendy, she's lives in Sweden right now, but she's we are from the same
not
loins.
Not a stripper.
No, not a stripper.
Just named after one.
Right. But we...
Must be a story behind that.
There probably is. I don't know if Mom ever told you why the eye and not the why, right? Did she ever say?
Oh, I know why. Yeah, because they watched a movie. I should figure out which movie it was. But they watched a movie. They were going to name me Tiffany, another awesome stripper name, probably with an eye.
Yeah.
But they watched this movie, and they liked a character. His name was Wendy, and they were like, oh, let's do that. Oh. And then when I was born, and I was terrifyingly weird looking and screaming, they were like, he's not a Tiffany.
Yeah, they look
so. I mean, then you know, you can't be like everyone else, so you gotta switch the spelling to make my life really fun. So thanks, guys.
Sure, good job, Mom, Dad. You guys killed it. Well done. Well, all right, we'll take you any way we can get you. It's my sister Wendy. She comes on Thursdays, talks about stuff that helps people live better lives. I think that's the deal. And why is that? Because she's a real therapist, but she sacrifices herself once a week and does it here for you, the betterment of the TMS community. And this week, you sent me the email, and it's a monster. It's freaking huge. But I'm going to read it, and I'm going to read it well. All right? So here it comes. Everybody get
lofty
ready.
Lofty promise, Johnson.
Yeah, it's a pretty lofty promise. So there's some sort of nice complimentary things they said at the top about us, and I won't read those. But thank you very much for those. That was very nice. We're not going to use this person's name. Here's the question. What are some good strategies for dealing with the aftermath of suicide attempts for everyone involved? Now, that's the question. Here's the background. Let me explain why I'm asking you this question. On January 30th, 2016 at 9:12 p.m., I swallowed an entire bottle of medication intending to kill myself. I've tried cutting myself before, but found that this method would be insufficient and painful. I messaged two of my friends to say goodbye, and fortunately, one of them responded in time. She told me to call 911. My desire to kill myself remained, but I listened. Please note that this was my first and only attempt. The ambulance came and took me to the hospital while my friend called my parents. When my parents arrived at the ER, the first thing my mom said was, quote, you knew we were going on a cruise, unquote. Ugh. This makes me mad when I read that, by the way. I hadn't known, but it sounded like they really needed that vacation. So on the worst day of my life, while drinking that nasty detox drink they gave me, I told my parents to go on their cruise. After all, I was safe in the hospital. I was a safe behavioral inpatient ward for a while, and they left the next day. Ugh, why am I so annoyed by that? It's like...
Well, there's lots of reasons to be annoyed by that.
It's like an unfunny Lucille Bluth. It's just, I want to punch them on. Anyway, I'd be lying if I said I was completely fine with their decision, but I don't want to cast them in a negative light and that they don't deserve. Honestly, I can't imagine being in their shoes. Suicide isn't an easy thing to deal with. What came next has been pretty confusing and disappointing. In the behavioral inpatient care, they told me many times that there are people in my life that care about me and want me to be alive. That was a message that really meant something to me. I wanted to spend time with my family afterward. My experience upon coming back wasn't what I expected. I got a few text messages the first week back. After that, I didn't hear anything from my parents, siblings, and even my friend that saved my life just for over 5 months. I made several attempts to get in contact with them, but I gave up eventually. My family eventually broke the silence and invited me to breakfast on the 4th of July. The prospect of starting to repair my relationship with them was very exciting. As you might imagine, things did not go as planned. A lot of things happened, but eventually my mom insinuated that my attempted suicide was to retaliate against them. Yeah, retaliate against them. I was speechless, so I kind of nodded and left at the first opportunity. At this point, it became very difficult to justify their behavior. I understand that in all disputes, both parties have a measure of responsibility. But I honestly don't know how it came to this. Negative things that happened since then, but they've just been more of the same. Even though I've known it was coming for months, spending Christmas alone was pretty devastating. My family was celebrating Christmas less than 20 miles away, but I knew I wasn't welcome there. So I stayed in my empty basement apartment the entire day. I couldn't leave because my car was acting up and I can't drive in the snow safely. Why did this happen is the question. I know my family has disowned me, but maybe my story can help people deal with mental disability and suicide. What do you think I can do to move forward? Why am I still, while I'm still very hurt by the actions of my family, I know that there is a whole other side of the story that I don't know. They haven't spoken to me for months, so something else could be impacting their behavior. You could also be certain that there were pretty bad cracks in my relationship with my family before the attempt. I should also mention that it's not all bad. My coworkers have helped me feel wanted for the first time in a long time. Because of them, I was actually able to open up presents this year. I got a space heater for my cold basement apartment, and I went to the movies with them. I didn't really expect that. Now, some quick background stuff, because that's always helpful, right? Mm-hmm. Background stuff. I have bipolar 2. Is that a classification, Wendy? Like 2? Like,
yeah. Okay. I'll explain that. Just keep going.
All right. Due to childhood trauma, I was raped by two of my elementary school teachers when I was 7. Jeez Louises! Sorry, this is hardcore. On this first day of second grade, and two of them worked together. I don't remember the abuse until November 19th, 2015, about 20 years later. I thought repressed memories were made up by Hollywood. My folks thought I made it up too. It explained pretty much every aspect of my life, and that was pretty great for about a day. And then the extreme panic started. I've always been nervous around women, chalking it up to inexperience, but after I remembered, I found using extreme tactics to avoid even being in the same checkout line as women. The chain of events that followed, remembering the abuse, is the true reason behind my suicide attempt. It was not because I wanted to get back at my parents by preventing them from going on a cruise, which I thought would be obvious, seeing as how I gave them permission to go. P.S. One thing I am quite proud of is I've never allowed my fear of women to turn into hatred of women. Sometimes I wonder if I will ever have a real relationship with a woman. I want that in my life, but it seems so improbable. Okay. So, Wendy, this is a hardcore one, dude.
Yeah.
I hate everything about it in terms of how he's been treated, but I assume this background stuff is like way buried headline. Like, this is a huge part of where we're at, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, let me distinguish between bipolar and bipolar 1 and 2 really quick. That is just basically a categorical difference. Bipolar 1 has manic episodes, and you have to meet certain criteria to have an episode be manic, and that's racing thoughts, usually very risky behavior. They can like repaint the whole house. They sleep 1 hour a night. It's really intense and semi-enjoyable, but also pretty scary compared to depression, of course. And then, of course, they have the other side, which is the depression. Bipolar 2 doesn't have full manic episodes. They have what is called hypomanic. They don't meet all the criteria. It's not as severe. Mm. And actually, unfortunately, they sometimes suffer from more often from episodes of depression. So it's not better. Right. Just a different category.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, where do we begin? Ooh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
I mean, it feels like you, I don't know. I don't know how any of this is talkable without painting it with the brush that is. He was assaulted by two teachers at a very young age. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. like everything feels like it branches from that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it really messes you up. I mean, there is no two ways about that. And it definitely sounds like his family is living in some kind of denial of some sort where they just don't see what he's been through or know how to help him or, you know, whatever it may be. And not to throw him automatically under the bus. I'm sure they have their own version of history. And, I mean, it sounds like that when he reaches out to them, they're just annoyed, which could be what it sounds like from his side, that they're just horrible, and obsessed with cruising and not being bothered. And that is a possibility. There are people like that, but, likely there's a history of him, their interaction, and they've sort of run out of steam and probably are not qualified or educated in any way to actually help someone with mental illness rather than, you know, sometimes people just have a comfortable bubble of living. They've all the people they know are normal, quote unquote, I'm air quoting. Yeah. Normal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their friend's kid, he's, you know, doing medical school. So what's wrong with you? And, you know, they just sort of have a comfortable way of living their life and thinking about the world. And, you know, they have a belief about people. If they just work hard, they'll be fine or whatever the dynamic might be.
Right.
And then you get a kid who, I mean, can you think of anything more horrible than being raped by your teacher on the first day of freaking second grade?
No,
what?
No, I can't. I can't think of anything worse. Oh my gosh.
Just horrifying. So, you know, what is happening in the family at that time that meant that kid got completely ignored or just got stuffed and repressed or whatever, but that there were no signs? I mean, there's signs. You don't have a kid go through that and he acts perfectly normal and happy and, you know, content. So it says something. So giving them the benefit of the doubt that they're just fine enough people that, you know, there really was a bubble they didn't want popped. And I think, to me, the reason I get that impression is her response at this 4th of July breakfast, which is like, you know, here you go again, trying to hijack our happiness,
right?
Like it's all about us and how we're feeling, and you just coming in and ruin it.
Yeah, I mean, it is really hard not to paint a picture of them being kind of this self-absorbed. Who cares about how you feel? This is how everything you do affects me.
Yeah. Right. You know? Well, not only that, it feels a little bit, and I've got some experience with this on the in-laws' side. The feeling of just under the rug sweeping, you know?
Yeah.
Like, don't want to face it, don't want to acknowledge it, don't want to pretend it's not happening. Like, I've literally had a conversation with, I won't name names, but with somebody where I brought up kind of an uncomfortable truth about a thing that they really like. Let's put it that way. I could tell Wendy off air and she'd get it. But, and this person said, instead of answering me or directly responding to what I said, looked at the sky and said, "What amazing weather we're having."
Oh no!
Like this, like this crazy, abrupt, obviously
non sequitur
deflection. Ugh. Yeah, just total deflection. Now, in that particular case, it was a much minor thing. It's nothing like this, but I imagine that's part of this, right? Like they're just like, we want to pretend like this awful thing is not true
under the rug. Yeah.
Because to them, this is another thing that happens 20 years later. They're basically being told or feeling that they're if not responsible, they are partly responsible because they were the parent. They're the ones that are supposed to protect you and help you. And this happened on their watch. And they don't want
to. And you know, every parent has experienced this feeling where your kid calls you out on your crap. Mm-hmm. And you have a split second decision. I double down because, damn it, I'm the mom. Or I have to like eat some humble pie, say I'm sorry, acknowledge I did it wrong. And not everyone's stable enough in their own life and their own sense of self to do that, especially if they have certain ideas about what being the parent means. No way would they have talked to their father that way or whatever, you know, this is usually generational crap. Right. And so absolutely, Scott, I think you're onto something that this is, it's like you want repressed memories to be a Hollywood thing when it's your kid. Mm-hmm. Like you really don't want that to be legitimate because that means that you sent your kid to school for years with his abuser, right? Like that's nuts if you really think about what that meant.
Yeah. Well, assuming that, that nothing was ever done about the rape, like if you know, if he reported it, we don't know. Honestly, we don't even know if the parents know about the school situation, don't know about the rape. They might, yeah. I don't know. I mean, if he repressed it, maybe he didn't tell anybody about it until just recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very likely. And it sounds like, you know, the 4th of July conversation to me is really telling, which is just sort of, you gave us permission to go on the cruise. Don't bring it up now as if, you know, you think about that kind of behavior is you have to rationalize, justify all of the ways that you're not a bad person. Mm-hmm. So if this person keeps coming back to you and saying, yeah, like I'm still in pain and that was hard. And remember when you guys went on the cruise? Yeah, of course I gave you permission because you're horrible. And you said, you know, we were going on a cruise. What are you going to do? I'm like barfing here, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's such a setup for him to always be wrong. And that's the thing that kind of shows up. When you're always wrong in your family, in the place that should be the safest, that really isn't safe, you know, you're going to struggle to feel safe anywhere. And obviously he's really drawn to go back to this family. And I've emailed a little bit back and forth with him. So I know a little bit about that. And he's gotten some great treatment. He is working again. This was last Christmas. So a little bit of time has gone by.
Oh, good.
Anyway, he's doing really well. And part of doing really well is keeping boundaries with his family. Because when you don't know that you don't know when something's hurting you. You just know you want the love and safety that should be there. There's this draw to return to it again and again, and then you get wounded again and again. And suicide makes sense at that point, right? You're not good enough to get what you need from the people who gave birth to you. So what do you do? And you can get really stuck in that mentality and that thinking. And it's really important, if this is resonating with anyone, to talk to someone outside of your family. And a lot of kids, and this is straight up, are basically told like only weak people talk to therapists, only crazy people, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of stigma within a family, not even culturally, it's a lot better, but within a family of like, that is not what we do, you know?
Yeah.
And so to the thought of, I got to tell someone my family secrets outside of my family, there's no way. But that spiral will just keep getting deeper and deeper and deeper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. So what does he do? Is it the right thing he's doing right now by blocking himself, basically keeping these borders? Is there a long-term detriment to that where, you know, the regret for that could become stronger and stronger, and then they never do anything on their end. They never make a move. So he's just left with this feeling of, well, my family, literally the people that should want me the most in their lives, don't want me here. That's what I'm worried about. Like, I get the short-term benefit of just saying, all right, well, this is how it is then. I don't want to be around them because they make me feel terrible. So I'm going to be around those people who like me, and that seems healthy. But it feels like it's not a end game. It feels like there's a big loose end on the end of that. You know what I mean?
Well, what do you mean by endgame? Like that he has reconciliation with his parents?
I mean, what I mean by that is like if for the rest of his life, if the solution is I'm barring myself from people who don't like me, that are the ultimate, these are the people that should love me no matter what, right? Like they should be, they should have my back no matter what. They don't, so I'm going to bar myself from them. That seems like a good idea if it's a guy bugging you at the coffee shop, but it seems like it sucks if it's somebody you're related to, because then you never have full resolution. Like what I don't want to see is, you know, 10 more years down the road, he has a real bad night and has all these thoughts about, oh my gosh, my family still hates me, and he attempts suicide again. Because, you know,
that's a great point. And it comes from you having had a loving family.
Yeah.
Because one of the most important options some folks have is to never speak to their family again. And that sounds nuts. But until you sort of really know what someone's been through and know that it's pure insanity to keep going back. But of course, we all have that draw. Of course. So what the work is that he does, it's not to decide I will never talk to them again or not. It's I have to nurture and love myself because the people who should be doing it automatically are not. And so because that's not happening, it's now on me. Mm-hmm. Now, as a second grader who's in this traumatic, horrible experience, he had no capacity to do so.
Right.
So he shut it all down, which is probably the way his family operates anyway. Right?
Yeah.
So he had no ability to do this. So you and I, and Brian, I assume, we had enough love, connection, that you could feel like you were valuable. You know, you got that feedback. That's the mirror, our first mirror in our life is that you're good enough and you're great, whatever. And then you go out into the world and someone's terrible to you, you just go, okay, yeah, I don't need that.
Yeah.
Because I've got my face.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And again... I can do that if it's a dork at work or a guy I don't like at the store because I don't have any connection to him. Who cares? Like right. If someone's a butthole to me in traffic, I can flip him off and keep driving.
But when it's the people who you feel like are the foundation of who should love you unconditionally and support you unconditionally, it's like you're in a lifeboat without an island or another ship to row to.
Yeah, you got nothing. You're just in your cold basement. Ugh, bums me out. I want to kick his mom
right,
in the head.
Hold on.
Hold on.
And again, it's because you guys have a family. Like you're talking about something you're missing, would be missing because you know what you'd be missing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He knows based on probably watching other people, having friends who've had families that seem normal. This isn't his own experience in some forms. Now, obviously, I don't know every detail, right? Maybe they were great for 10 years and then they went crazy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the key is not that there's nothing to come back to. It's that he has to build his own network of support, his new family. And this is what's kind of cool. What happens is, and he's got these coworkers buy him gifts and go to a movie with him. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to neglect the relationships that might be working or that could work, that you could work to grow by spending all your energy wishing these other ones were working.
Mm.
It's understandable. Mm-hmm. And yet it really will delay his healing and growth because he needs those people to behave well for him to get better.
Yeah.
And that is something you can't count on.
Right.
Most of us can count on someone being reasonable. And so then we're like, okay, great. And so it's easy. In fact, I joke with people, it's terrible, but it's so much easier to get over the damage done by a parent if they're dead. And that's because they can't keep being rude to you.
Right.
They can't keep saying the same phrases, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we write them letters and we deal with all the junk and then we can just burn it and bury it and they feel great. But the ones whose parents are still alive or sibling or whoever they're struggling with, they have to just figure out how to navigate Thanksgiving dinner with sort of those wounds. So the key is really not, you know, banish your family forever. It's tend to your own wounds, tend to your own needs, figure that stuff out. Before you head back into the, hey, I need you guys to love me, but, you know, I'm not sure if you will.
Yeah.
So he is working on that. In fact, we were emailing back and forth and I just said, you know, in this treatment program, I just wanted you to think about working the hardest you've ever worked in your whole life at figuring this out. And he wrote back a couple months later or this just recently and he said he has. And it has been this incredible shifting for him and there's still stuff, you know. he's dealing with, of course, but now he's helping, he's working two different jobs, helping addicts and helping other groups of people. Like it's amazing. Really channeling that. I get what it feels like to be neglected and abandoned and hurt and in pain. And, you know, and he's figured out a way to serve other people, which is cool. But here's the thing. He's coming back to this same question because it still lingers, which is, what are some good strategies for dealing with the aftermath of a suicide attempt for everyone involved? So in his case, he has this very specific family dynamic where they have added to the problem, not helped with the problem. So I want to make this a little more general for everybody, because there's going to be families where someone attempts suicide, they do the opposite and they cancel their cruise and they drop everything and they're there for you, right? So just some general tips to people, just need to understand a lot more than they currently do. We think we know what depression or bipolar is, and we think we know what OCD is. We think we have all sorts of ideas because lots of therapists are on TV now, and there's, you know, the labels thrown around or whatever. But for someone actually experiencing it, and family members of those who, you know, are connected to these things, you really need to talk to, you know, the people who know. And so there's a couple organizations that are really helpful. One is NAMI, N-A-M-I.
N-A-M-I? Okay.
N-A-M-I. Yeah, it's the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They have support groups. They have conferences. They have, it's a nonprofit that just does some really good work. So it's a great place to educate yourself.
And that's more for the families, but that also includes, you're saying that includes the families of the person who attempts suicide.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Okay. That's the main place I would send family members, because they have great groups for them and just sort of resources in general and understanding lots of stuff. So it's great. And then, you know, getting good help. And I know this sounds like, yeah, go get good help. Great. And I recognize what that means. That means if you have good insurance, you can probably get good help. And even then, sometimes there's not great help. But here's where, let's take the experience of having a family that's supportive and friends that are jumping in and ready to help and do their thing. Is to help them, I mean, they would get as educated as possible on what led up to the suicide attempt, to understand the dynamics of suicide. So here's a perfect one that everyone's going to do wrong. And I'm just going to tell you right now, this is the wrong thing to say,
okay. Which
is, even in passing, even at a just random dinner, you hear someone kill themselves, you say, oh, it's just so selfish.
Oh, man. Yeah. F that guy.
Yeah. Can we just take that out of everyone's brain? Part of it is, when you're mentally healthy, if you killed yourself, yep, that's selfish, because you took your glory away from everyone or whatever people think. But when you are at a place where it really seems like there's one option, and that is to override all your biology and end your life, you are not being selfish. You are lost. You are in so much pain. I don't think anyone who was in that much pain would ever say, oh yeah, you shouldn't do that. Let's just put like a pill we could pass around that you could just feel the psychological pain of someone who wants to die. And everyone say, yeah, okay, I get it. And it's just, you don't get it. And that's fine. I don't want you to get it. I don't want everyone to get it, but let's just take that out of our vocabulary. Right.
Right.
And in fact, it's very common for folks who are suicidal and to actually believe, as if it was as true as anything, that they are protecting everyone else by dying, that they are doing the most unselfish thing possible, because it's so bad. They believe it's so bad, and they're making everyone suffer because they're so bad that it is kind for them to do it. So when we go around saying it's selfish, there should be some kind of fine for that. Anyway,
I hear that after like a celebrity or a musician or something commit suicide. Last year, Chester Bennington, you know, you heard that occasionally on Twitter. It's like, okay, unfollow, block, whatever, mute.
He's a Linkin Park guy.
Linkin Park guy.
Yeah. I mean, Yeah. Especially, people are even more flippant about it when it's like some celebrity because they don't really know him. It's like Homer says, it's funny because I don't know him. If it's somebody, but when somebody says that, like at a, and I know people who do this, like would say something like that at a dinner or something, dude. Oh, that's enough to make you want to just throw your knife across the table. And I'm not a violent guy, but it makes me want to, you know?
And I have lots of tools that I use to just shut that stuff down by just saying, you know, I have a client who, and then I, it's a lie. It's not true. It's like for 40,000 years has been, you know, like I make it this dramatic. I mix a bunch of people together. Cause of course you don't have to keep privacy, but also it's like, oh, you will learn that you are wrong. And I will show you because I'm going to make you almost cry. And they're like, oh, don't invite her anymore. Anyway. Yeah. It's very frustrating. So education is huge. Access to people who get it and know, and there's some really great support groups, et cetera. You can always call the suicide prevention hotline. There's a national number, 1-800-273-TALK, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can call, no matter who you are, if you're a friend of somebody and they can help you. Obviously, we want, you know, there's other resources for you too, but, you know, it is crucial that folks talk to somebody. If we can prevent, if enough time can pass and they can talk through some things, they're less likely to be successful at the attempt. I mean, it's become a major, major problem. 40,000 people die every year of suicide.
Jeez, that's a lot.
The 10th leading cause of death overall.
Really? Wow. What's the number one one? Is it heart disease still?
Smoking. Oh, yeah, heart disease. Right.
I think so.
Oh, yeah. Is it? I don't know. Anyway. So, okay. So all of that. So know the signs. Here's the other thing. If you have a family member who just doesn't seem quite themselves, this is just good to know, everybody. Just go look up the signs and symptoms of somebody who's thinking about suicide.
Yeah.
Just kind of some of the things they do. If you have a teenager, you should know this stuff. One thing in particular is if someone's having a hard time and you know they're struggling, you don't really know what to do, and then suddenly they feel they're just suddenly happy, seem really peace. Seem very relieved. And you're like, all right. No, that's a bad sign. It means they maybe have decided that they will go through with it. If they're selling their possessions or they're, you know, it's just different. So you should, every parent of a five-year-old up should know these signs. And then just generally with most people, you're going to know somebody who is either thinking about it. And many people will never attempt, but doesn't mean they're not thinking about it. So get yourself educated, of course. Get resources, especially if you're a loved one or a family member of that. Actually, the emailer is doing exactly the right thing in the aftermath. Well, he did the thing everyone would do, is reach out to your network, and his network was not helpful. And so he's had to extend that to non-family members. He's had to, you know, he got really good treatment, which was awesome. He worked his butt off in it, which is amazing. And then he is now doing more work that he enjoys. And it doesn't mean he's perfectly happy. Everything's fixed. It means he's dealing with the stuff that he's dealing with.
Right.
It's not an easy question. Everyone's going to kind of handle it, but there are definitely resources out there. There is a state suicide hotline. There are local group. There are sort of different agencies will do that as well in different communities. And then obviously there's the national hotline as well. Mm. So it's not easy now. And the family dynamic thing, I mean, everyone's going to be a little bit different, but to really get an outside perspective can be very, very helpful. Because you're just feeling like I'm worthless. Obviously it's better that I die because they're responding to me in a certain way. And it really may not be you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible. Well, let us know. Obviously you're already talking to Wendy, and time has already passed in a lot of this stuff. So, upward momentum sounds like that's happening anyway.
Definitely glad to hear that there's a positive, that good stuff has been happening since this letter was written.
Yeah. Which is always good. We don't always get that perspective. It's almost like time traveling. I kind of like this. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Right.
And I would love someone at some point to email in about how their mother handled something, right?
Mm-hmm. Kind of rare.
I just like to know that exists.
Just so there's, just so that they're not all. I love Scott's comparison. Louise Bluth out there. Yeah,
yeah. They're all like Lucille Bluth with their like freaking. Or this seems like it anyway. I mean, obviously, plenty of you don't hear from the ones that are all doing fine. So it's a bit of a bias in terms of what you hear because you're only going to hear from the ones that complain. But yeah, like we'd love to hear some positive mom stories.
Yeah, but it has to be like something hard happened and then she handled it right. Because I don't want to be like, oh, my mom was so great. She always made cookies. Like, okay, that's cool. But like something crazy happened and my mom pulled it off. The other thing I forgot to mention is he does not speak of his father ever. Mm. He says parents.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just have a, I have a made up character for his dad.
Do you think it's like a yes, dear kind of thing? Like, a okay, dear, yes, passive, dear, that kind of guy?
A little bit. Yeah.
We're going on this cruise. Yeah.
Exactly. And he's inside. He's like, oh, maybe okay, that's dear. Not. Yeah. I've met a few men in my day who are just, they have to keep the wife happy and the kids definitely get, you know, suffer because of it. So, you know, maybe that's a dynamic and good one to bring up with your therapist.
Yeah. Well, let us know how it goes. And anyone else out there dealing with this sort of stuff, if you got your own little spin on this and you want to share it with us, let us know. You can email us right here at themorningstream@gmail.com, or you can go to therapythursdays.com and leave a message there. Wendy gets those emails directly. Wendy, anything else you'd like to, you don't have anything to pimp. You're our least pimpy person. No, I know you're working on some stuff.
Pimping is just, I mean, I have the stripper name, but I have not.
Give it up for Wendy on the center stage, everybody. Wendy on the
Savannah,
stage.
Savannah, you're on deck.
That's right. Have a fantastic week and my best to everybody. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye now. Oh, how do you hang up on people? There you go. Wow. That made a sound. A yeah, it was good. Rough, but good.
Yeah,
good that we had to talk about it.
And good that we have a happy ending already that we can, or not a happy ending, but like a we have happier progress,
happier progress. That's a good way to put it.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
Adam wrote in quick email, says this funny Japan story after listening to TMS 1411. My fiance, or fiance, as my dad used to say, is teaching English in Hokkaido, in a rural part that doesn't see a lot of tourists. We went out for lunch one day, and I had to use the restroom and found myself in a bidet, I guess. I don't think that's spelled right.
That's not how it's spelled. B-I-D-E-T is the right way, but that's all right.
That's fine. Bidet. For the first time, after taking care of business, I realized there was no lever to flush, and I found an electronic screen in all the Japanese, to operate the bidet. These weren't any photos depicting what the buttons do. After 5 minutes of panicking on a toilet, I realized I had my phone with me. I had to pull my Google Translate app out to figure out how to flush it. Never went without my phone again. Love the show, though. Yeah, that stuff works. Totally works, man.
Yeah, that Google lens is amazing. We used that when we were in Japan, and we had to be very sparing with it because we were using... you know, roaming data. Mm-hmm. But I did the AT&T thing and pre-bought like 5 gigs of data before we went on the trip for $60 just to say, okay, well, we're going to need this. We'll just use it while we're out there. And that came in handy whenever there weren't the handy little pictures that say, here's the little water fountain looking thing under a butt. And here's the little,
yep.
You know, the air dryer or whatever.
Yeah. That's so pretty great. So there you go. Take your phone is the lesson. That's going to do it for the show, everybody. We're going to get out of here. Patreon.com/TMS. Now, tomorrow, we're on for a Friday episode brought to you by Patreon.com/TMS.
Because you guys are awesome.
That's right. It's our PM edition. It'll be at 1:30 Mountain Time in the PM. So come join us at frogpantstv.tv for that. Another reminder that our good buddy Jamie, who does rad mashups for the show, I got a new Twitter account I'm supposed to be using. It's at TMS Mashups. And what's cool about those is you'll find links to all the previous ones and stuff he's working on.
Awesome.
Yeah. So use that. TMS Mashups on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson. Brian's at Coverville. The show is at Morning Stream. And if there's anything else you need, you'll likely find it at frogpants.com/TMS. You have a request and you should read it.
I do. And one real, couple other quick URLs you should know about. tinyurl.com/TMSrequests if you want to make a request. Is the easiest way to do it. Well, it's the only way to do it.
All right.
if I get an email with a request for TMS, I reply back and say, use this link because it's where everything is stored nice and conveniently for me. The other one is coverville.com/TMS. If you ever want to look back and see what songs we've played, both the indie in the middles and the covers at the end, Iceworm does an amazing job. By the way, happy after birthday. Ooh, I don't want to say after birthday. Happy post day after your birthday, Iceworm. Happy after birthday. Yes. Delicious. Let's all go get some fries.
Happy birthday, buddy.
But happy birthday. It was yesterday, and it was Iceworm.
Yeah.
Anyway, he keeps all that stuff there with links to where you can hear and buy the music. So that, again, is at coverville.com/TMS.
Nice.
This one's going out to Luke, who also emailed in and said, hey, did you get my request? And I said, I did, but you put it in for January 2017, so I missed it. Mm. We got that fixed. He says, hello, Itchy and Scratchy. For the fourth year in a row, I would like to request a cover of a Queen song for my birthday, but it's on a Saturday, so hopefully Brian can get it in sometime before. That's it, short and sweet. I can see why you like it being so early for a fish sandwich, so get him, Daddy.
I can definitely see why you like it.
Hey, it's too early to get a fish sandwich.
Okay, wait, the Daddy one. Hold on.
Daddy is Satan.
That's not it. Oh, I never recorded that. That's why. I don't have that.
Oh, we don't have a get him, Daddy.
No, that's we just watch the video a lot, so we don't have it.
This goes out to Luke, a whatnot in the tadpole.
Nice.
Says, how about Killer Queen by Travis? Dude, I've got it, and I've never played it on the show, amazingly enough. It was a bonus track included on the reissue of the Invisible Band, great Travis album, mm-hmm. with Sing on there. Love Travis, man. They're like, they were similar in style to Coldplay, and I think Coldplay just kind of got all the attention, and Travis should have. They probably got a little more attention out in the UK, but they deserve some love here from our friends here stateside. Travis and their cover of Queen's Killer Queen.
Nice. Let's play it. We'll be back tomorrow at 1:30. Be here. Bye.
She keeps them away in Shandon. In a pretty cabinet, let them eat cake, she said, just like Marie Antoinette. Built in a remedy from Khrushchev and Kennedy. Any time an invitation you can decline. Caviar and cigarettes, well versed in etiquette, extraordinary nice.
She's a killer queen, gunpowder trinity, dynamite with a laser beam. She never kept the same address in conversations. She spoke just like a baroness. Met a man from China without Dr. Geisha Mala. Then again, I don't believe it, but cry. Perfume came naturally from Paris. Naturally, because she couldn't do this. Fastidious and precise.
She's a killer.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Ryuga Teki Wokurao!